Hi, folks. I'm Jack Kennedy, and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Another pretty poor week of weather, costs rising sharply on many farms, and lost weight gain, milk and grass on nearly all farms. This week, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty, and Aidan Brennan. Later in the show, we'll hear from Monaghan exile Olin Green and as he updates us on his life journey milking cows in New Zealand. First up, it's the quick fire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868366465. Adam, I've just one in here for you this week. Lime before slurry or slurry before lime? Just they mustn't have got the rain up in your neck of the woods.
So it's always a confusing one, this, and I always get confused on it as well. But it's, you're better concentrating on the slurry first, maybe, and get the slurry out, because it would say the lime before the slurry can affect the nitrogen uptake or the efficiency of the nitrogen in the slurry. So you better go with slurry first and then go with lime after. If you do go the other way, I think it's, you know, a couple of months, maybe 2 or 3 months, you have to leave it until you go with the slurry then.
Okay, and I saw an extension there to the deadline for the scheme, for the Lyman scheme, to the end of June, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think 28th of June, I think, yeah.
Thanks, Adam. Darren, one quick fire in for you here. Thinking of fattening your hoggets, will the price stay up? An easy one, Darren.
There's no point saying, Jack, I hope no one is recording this. You could often say that at a farm meeting, but it depends on when you're selling, I suppose. All the indicators will be that the price is going to stay strong. It's been fueled by supplies being very tight and demand holding robust. And for that viewer or listener, I would say that if them your hoggets are ready at the end of this month or the start of April, well, then there should be nothing to affect the trade, because Easter's coming on the 31st of March. Ramadan is coming on the 9th of April. We've seen numbers even very tight this week for the start of Ramadan. We see prices increasing after the start of it, which generally goes against the norm. So I would say, Jack, as long as they're ready in the next few weeks, there should be no issues. And look, supplies are going to stay tight right out for spring, but whether or not the prices just hold, time will tell. But definitely they should hold for the next few weeks anyway.
Excellent. Thanks, Darren. We'll hold you to that. Aidan, I'll just stay with you for a couple of minutes because I know you're under pressure, and we'll hear lots from you. You had a chat with Olin, our Monaghan exile, in terms of what's happening in New Zealand and all things dairy. So we'll hear lots from you later on. So maybe the quick fire I have, Aidan, first for you is, saw Aidan writing about fertilizer products containing sulfur. What products has he in mind? Talk to me, Aidan.
Yeah, Jack, look, there's a whole raft of products available with sulfur. Nearly every compound now, or straight urea or straight can products, would say you can get it with sulfur included. So, most commonly, you'd be going with either protected urea or sulfur or an 18612. The 18612 product is common now, Jack, and, you know, the April application would say a lot of farmers will go with a bag and a half per acre of that, or 2 bags per acre if it needs it. But important in May and June, April, May and June, I should say, to get some sulfur out, the recommendation is 5 units per acre per month. So that 18612 plus S is a nice product. Or if you don't have the allowance for the P and K, or the P anyway, P, there's not needed for the K. You know, you have the urea, which is 38 plus 7, and that's a protected urea product as well. So you would say expert in that.
Yeah. Aidan, to stay with you for a minute or two, I was talking to a West Clare farmer, and he was only getting out with bag stuff late last week. There was cold winds there, and he said the place had dried up a lot, but obviously there's a lot of rain since. Is there guys getting out with fertilizer?
There was earlier in the week, Jack, you know, and last weekend, you know, I mean, like Saturday, Sunday, last weekend were quite good days, you know, and there was, as you said, there was a kind of a typical March weather, and that drying wind was present. Now, windy is not great for fertilizer spreading, I suppose, but it was good for the ground conditions anyway. A lot of farmers got the chance to go out then. They got out with slurry also. But I suppose since then, it's been very wet. Torrential rain, and particularly down in Munster. And again, they're on Wednesday, it was, you know, there's another shot of rain after all the rain that came on Monday night. Look, the forecast is looking better, but ground is very wet. You know, fertilizer's off the radar, Jack, really, for the next couple of days at least. See what happens after the weekend and into next week. But for now, I'd say hold off on fertilizer. It's not going to be limiting grass growth at the moment. All the rain is limiting it. So I would hold off until conditions change. But conditions will change quickly this time of year, so keep fit.
Aidan, you have a piece there on the, you have a focus on spring AI. Like guys are, you know, busy pulling calves out now, we'll call it at the moment, like, and busy around yards with the weather and all that kind of thing. Like, I presume a lot of farmers, a lot of your guys have the job done on kind of deciding on straws at this stage, have they? Or kind of what's the kind of lie of the land, you reckon?
Yeah, in the main, Jack. I mean, those that are focused on it, yes. And I mean, they're the ones that are, I suppose, are into breeding. I was just discussion group meeting was on there last week, and you know, about 2/3 of the group would say had their bulls picked already. So I suppose they're the ones that are focused on it. As I say, they're interested in breeding, and there's a large cohort of farmers that aren't interested in breeding, and they're probably waiting for the AI man to come to the yard before they decide what bulls to use, or in some cases, the AI man or AI woman is picking the bulls for them. And that's fine, provided that there are good bulls that are being used. So what I'm stressing in the paper this week is that, you know, you have to ensure that you're using the best bulls. There's a €50 gap, €50 in EBI gap, Jack, between the top 10% EBI herds and the average EBI herds. That's a 28% difference. For me, it's too much. You know, you're always going to get a top 10% and a top 50%. But if you the gap should be narrower, and that shows then that the best bulls are being used across the board. But there's poor decisions being made, I think, in terms of the type of bull that's used in dairy farms. And that's reflecting the figures. So, yeah, I would definitely say that if you haven't the job done now, sit down and do it. Or equally, if you have no real interest in it, and the numbers kind of scare you, which I think happens in some situations. You're not, the PTAs are confusing, and they are, you know, it takes a while to get your head around all the figures. Absolutely no doubt about that. Maybe outsource the job to someone you trust, or just go to a farmer in your area, a farmer in your discussion group that you know has good figures. You know that the fertility is good and the fat and protein percent is always excellent. Just ask them what bulls are using and just use the same ones. Because you know, there's no problem in someone sharing the information that they have. Like, you know, it's not like you're selling trade secrets. So definitely I would consider doing that, you know.
Aidan, you had a good chat with the Monaghan man. He's getting on well in New Zealand, it seems.
Yeah, it seems to be. I mean, he was real positive around what's happening over there. In his own situation, he's moved farm again. So the last time I was out there was 2018, and I visited him, and he was running two farms at that point in terms of share milking them, you know, two smaller farms. He's now gone to his dream farm, 800 cows, a big 50-unit roughly apparently in the middle of the farm. It seems like the dream, you know, and he's bought a bit of land since, and he's also share milking a smaller farm as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's real progress. Like, and, you know,
he got the hip done
as well. Yeah. So we'll hear his views on how that's progressing and the causes of that later in the show, exactly. When we're getting a chat to him. But look, it's great. It's great to see the opportunity that still exists, I suppose, out in New Zealand. Same, no more than Ireland. There's loads of opportunities here as well. And there will continue to be so, but it's great to catch up with Olin again after following them for the last 10 or 15 years.
Brilliant. Thanks, Aidan. Thanks for that. And we'll chat again next week. Later in the show, we'll hear your chat with Olin and see what the lie of the land is there. Excellent. Thank you. Adam, come back to you. Maybe just to pick up from last week. Remember I said one of the buddies was going to test your 384 average for weanlings. Well, he did. He tested it all right. Now, he didn't exactly get the 384, but he got 325, Adam, right, for these Charlie-type weanlings that we were talking about. They were give or take a year old, 420 kilos. One with the other, they made close, knocking on 1,500 euros a piece, like for his 420 kilo Charlie weanlings, like came in around something like around 325 or something like that. Like, but like he was happy at him in terms of like, you know, they were just over a year old, you know, or, you know, knocking on a year old and to turn them into 1,500 euros. He said, where would he be going holding on to them for another year and putting the extra cost in? Like he said, it didn't stack up for him.
Yeah, that's it, Jack. They're a long way off finish as well in terms of that weight. You know, there's a lot of meal to go into them bulls in terms of feeding and a lot of unknowns as well. So look, I think you can't look at that and criticize anybody for taking that money in terms of that 325. Probably those Charlie ones, they're always a bit of a better trade. And I know I said 384, but that's the top ring for us on the market bids analysis. And it's up there again this week, actually. It's only down 1 cent this week for the 300 to 400 kilos. So as you go up in weight, maybe that comes back down a wee bit. But look, it's great to see it, and you have a combination of exporters and you know, farmer finishers and feedlots all competing for those calves at the moment. Yeah.
So with the winning price, the price and the averages are still holding up, Adam. Like and the demand there from the exporters, etc. That's all still there. No,
yeah, absolutely. That Shorthorn Express was loaded in green ore on Saturday. 2,300 bulls went out of that ship, and it's down around the south of Spain at the moment, heading for North Africa. It's going to dock there on the 14th. And it's going to be back. We'll say the talk is that's going to come back again very, very quickly for another load, because exporters are all buying up, we'll say, again. And it's not just that North African trade, it's Turkey, it's Eastern Europe. There's real good appetite there at the moment for Wienerlands. You see Mark's putting on like special sales at the moment for Wienerlands to try and lure them out to get calves for exporter.
Right, that's the Wienerland job, that's the suckler job, that's all positive. I see one of the lads was down in Union Hall. Are you down there, were you?
No, I'd want a passport to get down there, Jack. Tommy was out there for a Dairy Beef 500 walk. I look at a really, really positive place. I look at it, it's one of these, we'll say, Dairy Beef farms that it works to stack them high and rack them up, because any we'll say, high profit system I've seen in Dairy Beef, that's always the way it is. It's high stocking rate. This, we'll say, man is stocked at 190, I think, kilos, 95 kilos of nitrogen to the hectare. Yeah. Really good gross margin, really good net margin, up, predicting to be over 900 for 2024. Carcass weight is probably, you know, a little bit lower maybe than you would like in terms of 2023, 244 for the heifers, 295 for the bullocks. But that's the reason that these systems work well at high stocking rates. You can maybe afford to take that little bit lesser of carcass weight, but you're probably rimming it there at 244 in terms of being in spec with them all if you're averaging 244. But using his strengths, he's an AI man, buys calves off four dairy farmers, knows the bulls is going into the cows, was buying them off dealers and in marts, and has moved away from that based on healthy calves. And it's a system working really, really well. The grass is growing over the ditches down there for the walk. Ground wasn't in great order. I think Tommy was saying they were parking cars on the roadways. Roadways were equally important for parking cars as they were for getting cattle out on the farm. But no, it's a nice read. And again, capitalising on the strengths, it's good grass going country, I think, down there.
Oh, it is. It's great. It's a serious part of the country, and obviously big in cow country, like down there in the Carbery region, where every acre is worshipped. But yeah, and they've had a lot of rain over the last day or two as well down there. They had their orange warning there on Thursday down that neck of the woods. Excellent. Adam, coming back to the Schep job, and I suppose the changes. So we saw kind of another confirmed change this week in terms of the pedigree bulls on that. I think you said last week that you didn't kind of maybe that wasn't going to come.
No, it did, in fairness. No, and you have to hold your hands up when it comes. We were waiting for a few days, and we were sort of, I would have been told maybe that it wasn't going to come, but it did come eventually this week. And that's, I suppose, it's a less worry for those farmers that would have bought bulls last spring that were okay in September, went down in November, and then they were looking at change that bull again this year ahead of the breeding season. But the latest change now means that they don't have to do that. They can go back to the September index. So look, there's a lot of things now going back to the September index and for Skep, and that will leave a lot of farmers will rest a lot easier in terms of hitting the deadlines for Skep in the future. There's 80% of the calves this year needs to be sired by a 4 or 5 star bull. Some of those bulls went down in November, and that was leaving them farmers out. So yeah, it's good. But I guess, Jack, Skep is one thing, and we said it all along. You know, the other thing is, in terms of Chagas and ICBF now need to go back, and we shouldn't forget about this in terms of doing the work on the Wienerland sub-index, and also looking at that extensive model in terms of, is the cost the same at a 170 stocking rate than it is at 100 stocking rate, and does that filter through to the indexes the same as well? So there's a big job of work there to be done, and look, we'll watch that with interest as to what it comes.
I mean, was there a lot of frustration? I know you were up in Roscommon. Was there a lot of frustration on that kind of, I call it the direction of travel of breeding in the suckler cows? Was there a lot of annoyance at that meeting in Roscommon?
Was there? Jack, and I suppose, look, at ICBF's getting caught in the middle here. Maybe, you know, suckler farming feel maybe that they're at the back end all the time, you know, in terms of where policy is going, and they're being squeezed out, and maybe, you know, the finances isn't as good either maybe as other sectors in that suckling sector. So So ICBF seemed to be maybe vented out a little bit in terms of that, but there was huge frustration at that meeting in terms of, you know, they were sort of saying, and look, there was two sides to it. Sean Collin was ahead and he gave a very good presentation on Stars in terms of, you know, five-star cows performing very well in Roscommon. But look, I don't think farmers were there to hear that. They didn't want to hear that if they were there. And that just sort of venting a little bit in terms of it was their livelihoods they felt that was being jeopardized in terms of these changes. And Lincoln supports to maybe indexes and genetic programs, there was a lot of kickback against that in terms of maybe that should have never happened. So look, there was a lot of argument that night at that meeting. Yeah,
excellent. Fill me up in terms of the mart trade and kind of the beef trade first. You know, I mean, prices in general,
it's all positive.
Is it more positive than steady?
It is, absolutely. We've seen a massive drop off in the kill this week, 2,700. It's a while since I've seen a bigger drop. You know, usually in a bank holiday week or something, you'll see that drop, but that was a massive drop last week. Heifers down 1,300 head. And heifers in particular demand this week. Speaking to a guy that finished a lot of heifers, he was saying he got two texts and a phone call inside 24 hours from a procurement manager looking for heifers, you know, so that's always a good sign. You know, quotes up 10 cents, you get 5.30 for heifers now. I'd say if you had a load of heifers to go, 5.20 on the table for everybody, 5.10 for bullocks. So that's an increase of 5 or 10 cents inside a week. And I know maybe Darren will come in on this, but speaking to a couple of people across the water, they're reckoning with lamb at the price that it's at, it could be under pressure to get onto tables for Easter. And some retailers are foreseeing maybe some issues there, right, and they're going to promote beef as opposed to lamb. Now, I know it's not one against the other, but maybe there's a really positive there for my lads in that.
And it's coming early, finish up. Sorry, Easter's coming early, I mean. But Adam, finish up on the calf trade and just a kind of a summary in terms of what we were saying last week. We were saying the lighter calves, and I was watching a couple of marts. It's still the case. Like they don't want anything less than 50 kilos, really. Or you know, a light calf is no business in a mart at this stage. Like.
Yeah, absolutely. Tommy spoke to a few mart managers again this week for this week's mart page. And you know, managers are saying they're turning away maybe 50, 60 calves out of marts in terms of being too light. And look at that message will eventually get through to dairy farmers to hold onto them calves a bit longer. 1,900 calves in Bandon, a big show of calves down there. And you know, a good calf is a good trade down there. Probably export calves. Yeah, maybe between 20, 30 and 50, 60 euros in terms of that maybe lighter Frisian type, we'll say export calf. But the heavier Frisian calf is actually, I've seen prices of 150 and 160 for good Frisian bull calves, you know, good square Frisian bull calves this week. And we're seeing, I suppose, not a huge difference now between black and white and black maybe in Hereford. A light calf is a light calf no matter what the breed now is, and I've seen some very, you know, small calves make small money regardless of breed and regardless of colour this week. But no issues with shipping. That could change in the morning in terms of what might happen, but at the moment it's steady as we go there, and I think everybody's getting away good.
100%. Listen, we'll finish on that because it's a very positive story all round, as you say, this week. So excellent. Thanks for that, Adam. Darren, maybe to kind of pick up from there in terms of what Adam was saying. He's saying you won't get the Easter lamb trade because it's coming too early, and the beef price is going to be more competitive, and it's going to be more beef sold for Easter than lamb, unfortunately for you.
Yeah, and if you were to believe some industry commentators, they'd say that the fact that beef is up at a high level as well, and the fact that all sort of proteins are up at a high level, that it has lifted all boats. And that's, I suppose, you'd hope that's the situation, Jack, because it's not, as Adam said, it's not one against the other. But there definitely is a concern. Look, we've seen 2 years ago in particular when land prices went high, and especially in the UK, that it did have a significant impact on consumption, because there was a tipping point where people could pay for say lamb, and this and look at that, always comes with a risk, sort of. But what you'd probably say at the moment is this: lamb prices are high right across Europe. They're high, I suppose, globally, with the exception of New Zealand and Australia. And as it does seem to be that sales have been pretty good. And that I'd say in some cases, probably what you're seeing, Jack, is the retailers are absorbing some of that price rise. Okay. I imagine that a lot of them will continue maybe to do that for the Easter market or to a point, because it's a real sort of selling point. If you look at any of the leaflets that come in the Sunday papers or that come in the door from Super Value or Tesco or whoever it be, coming into Easter, they all want that the roast, the leg of lamb, or your lion chops, or your roast of beef, or your ham. Like, it's a real strong point, real strong sales points to get footfall in the door. And I imagine that'll be the same way. But we do have to be cognizant of that fact as well, Jack, that it can dent consumption.
Yeah. So getting back to kind of real prices, Hoggets are holding up in price, Darren, and still over the €200. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, sure. Jump on, Jack. Like, we were talking this time last week about, I won't say flash in the pan, but about, say, a select number, maybe.
Higher end, 200. Yeah.
Yes. Like, I went to a few sales this week, and it was between 15 and 25% off the entry that was over €200. Like, so significant, significant numbers. Like, taking Kilkenny, which was, I suppose, stood out because Hoggets made up to 230. But, like, if you took that percentage of that sale, you had over 20% of sheep selling over 200, same way in Athenry, you between 25% of the Hoggets on offer selling over 200. So it's not a case of, say, just one sort of here or there. And some market managers would have said that they have seen significantly higher entries, that while numbers are tight, that numbers entered in March sales have held compared to last year. And that shows that there is more farmers opting to try and take advantage of the live trade and that bit of demand, rather than show sheep in the factory, rather than go direct to the factory. And, like, signs are on it, Jack. Like, I just did a quick calculation. 23.5 kilos at 840 a kilo, which would be a good price this week in the factory, comes in to 197. If you have heavy Hoggets and they're coming into over 200, it is covering the higher commission, because in general, it's less than €1 to kill in the factory. It's maybe anywhere from €2 to 270, 280, even €3 on to sell a Hogget going on, depending on what way the commission is based. But there is more farmers opting for that. We have seen the factory price increase by about 10 to 15 cent a kilo. The quotes are somewhere in the region of 8 to 10, but in general, very few sheep move in less than 825, 830 kilo, and upwards of 850 kilo at the higher end of the market. Interestingly, Jack, when I was filling out the price table on Wednesday, it was the first time I put in 1,000 cent into the price table. It was ICM's quote for milk lamb is €10 a kilo.
Wow.
Now, we talk about milk lamb. About milk lamb, it's a carcass between 10 and 13 kilos. But it was just funny because Brian Murphy, who lays out the pages, said, "Are you sure that quote is right?" And I said, "Yeah." And
I have to make the column wider,
exactly. And spring lamb is also starting bright as well. ICM at the first plant quote for spring lamb, €9 of a base quote plus 20 cents, say, after a QA payment. So spring lamb starting off around 920 kilo.
Okay. Nice one, Darren. I want to move on just to the scheme piece for a bit, in terms of the entitlement trading side of things. Like, you have a front page story there this week in terms of, I suppose, the sales of entitlements last year, and maybe a little bit of an expectation what you're thinking will happen in kind of, I suppose, the next 2 months. You were expecting a bit of a rush in terms of entitlement selling.
Yeah, so if we look at the last 4 years, entitlement sales 2020-2021 were at a low level, say maybe, I think it was around 15 or 16,000 entitlements per year. In 2022, that jumped to over 30,000 on the back of some farmers moving to sell entitlements while they still had the green in value. And then in 2023, the sales of entitlements moved to almost 55,000 entitlements. So a 71% increase year on year. The value went from about 5.5 million to about 8.5 million. So that's where you were looking, say, at the jump in that. And from what people in the trade are telling me, Jack, is that an awful lot of farmers last year that maybe thought about selling entitlements just sort of set tight or bided their time, and that they're now deciding on possibly selling entitlements. And this has been fueled by a few different things. So there's an amnesty on the clawback on the sale of entitlements without land for 2023 and 2024. Essentially, what that means is, if you sell entitlements to me next year, Jack, and you sell 10 entitlements, 10 of those will be lost. So there's a 20% clawback. That amnesty is there at the moment. That will finish when, say, the BIS applications close, or finish in 2024. And what the auctioneers or those specialising in the trade of entitlements are saying is that people who set tight last year just to see what way entitlement values evolved, that they are now looking to see about selling entitlements this year. So I would predict, and they would predict, that they will handle more sales of entitlements over the next couple of months.
So just to be clear, Darren, in terms of if I sell my 10 entitlements next year, 2025, I lose 2 entitlements, is that what it is, of the 10? 20%.
Exactly.
Yeah.
20%, yeah.
Excellent, yeah. So whereas if I do it this year, now I call it in the next 10 months, or in the next 2 months, I'm selling my entitlements, I don't need them anymore, I'm not actively farming, I won't forfeit the 2 entitlements. I'll sell 10. I get the value for 10, kind of effectively.
Exactly. That's exactly. And now there is a couple other bits that's adding to it. One is the active farmer piece. So we would have talked about this time last year. I think we had a front page story about 10,500, what we call them, armchair farmers. Some people were not impressed about it, but that's the term that's being used, I suppose. Yeah. Is this, and what it refers to is that a farmer that is maybe was drawn down his entitlement payments but had no agricultural activity. To be able to draw down any scheme payment now in the new cap, you have to be deemed an active farmer, whether that be having a minimum stocking rate, proving that you're growing crops for sale, or that you're delivering environmental goods. So that has tightened the net a small bit. And then also the devaluation of entitlements. So what I mean by the devaluation of entitlements is taking the 25% out for eco schemes, taking the 10% out for CRIS, and then entitlement values being subject to convergence. So you've seen a reduction in the value of entitlement. So for some farmers that were, say, working in the past of maybe if I leased entitlements to you, I kept 60%, you took 40%. Very, very hard to get that same premium now. And the money that you're talking about is a lot lower, because your entitlement values have close to half. So your BIS entitlement value is 62% of what was the original value. So that's also enticing some farmers that are sitting on the fence about sales to now look at the sales option.
Yeah. And Darren, have we any indication in terms of prices yet, or the value of entitlements, or is it just kind of warming up now and kind of the next couple of weeks will tell a lot there?
Just sort of warming up, Jack. We plan to do a sort of in-depth survey next week, looking at the prices that's on the market, looking at, say, a couple of case studies around sales versus leasing entitlements. So for somebody that sells now versus what might happen if they kept them until 2027. And we have a few options around that, and also say some tips on the lease of entitlement. So we're just getting going, Jack, on that, and getting some of the data back from auctioneers and what has been traded so far. We don't really want to go, I suppose, on low numbers of say entitlements being traded, but there's a very variable range depending on the entitlement value that's say on offer at the moment.
Okay. Darren, you were with me when we were launching the land report that's free with the journal this week on Wednesday in Tullamore. Like the price of land, I call it, in the west and northwest probably didn't get the same kick as it did in the east, you know, based on Paul's figures for 2023. That he showed some prices for, I think the average price in some of the eastern counties now like was kind of 16,000-17,000 on average. I think the national average is just shy of 12,000, but maybe back as far as kind of 9 and 8 in some of the counties down around up around you there in Galway.
Yeah, and even within the county I was talking to Paul, there's a nice bit of variation. And a good bit of it has been driven by where dairy farmers are located, or maybe where, to a lesser extent, maybe where tillage ground is, or the better quality land. But you'd have to say that the last sort of 2 years has been challenging for farmers on marginal lands. And like the appetite there to drive on and purchase land at higher prices just hasn't been there. Now, as Paul said, there still is great demand for land, but it's just that the intensity at which prices were increasing has sort of stagnated. And that's also shown in reports of suckler cow numbers falling, sheep numbers falling. Anytime you take sort of, I suppose, that optimism out of it, and when cash is a bit tighter at farm level, it does have an impact. Now, I know we look and we say that in some of those sales, off-farm employment is driving it as well. But when you say farming soaked up more investment over the last 2 years with input costs, and I think that definitely had an impact on the intensity or the optimism for land sales, particularly in some of the more marginal areas. Slowed it up a bit.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. No, listen, lots more on that in the land report this week, free with the Farmers Journal. Darren, 100%, I'll leave you go. Thanks for that. Thanks for taking the time out, and we'll chat again next week. Folks, as I said earlier, myself and Aidan had a chat with Monaghan man Olin while he was at home last week for a few days. Let's have a listen.
Right, folks, delighted to be joined by Olin Greenan and Aidan Brennan, our dairy editor, to have a chat about, I suppose, dairying in New Zealand and what's happening out there. Olin, good to have you back on the show. You've got the hip done since we saw you last.
Oh, I did, yeah, new man, thanks. sign of my age, but yeah, had a bit of arthritis and got the job booked in, so I'll be...
Had it anything to do with all the cows you've milked over the last 20 years, or is that just a rumour?
Well, there's probably two answers to that. The current staff we have made of a different version. When they probably haven't seen me in this shed for a while. But look, mate, it had something to do with that. But I don't know. We're looking forward to next calving. We'll be in less pain. So, yeah.
Good man. Olin, just remind our listeners in terms of your business out there. Like, you're over there a good while now. You've set up camp there now, I'll say firmly. You're home for a couple of days, and that's why we're delighted to get a quick chat with you in terms of what's happening over there. But you've set up camp, and look at your long term. It looks like you're going to stay there. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's right, Jack. So I suppose you'd sort of been following the story along the years. So we made a move. We moved to a larger farm 1st of June gone by there. So we're currently, the farm we live on, we're wintering 780 cows there through a 50-bale rotary. And then we've got another smaller share milking job of 250 cows, which incidentally we're winding down this year. And 1st of June, well, we bought a small block of land. It's only 12 hectares, but more of a lifestyle block. So it's ticking a box, more a family slash land banking thing. But sure, it's a farm, sure, no matter what size it is. But,
yeah. Be fine farming Monaghan, like.
Yeah, well, actually, my father was commenting that that's what he started out with. But look, as you know, as a share milker, it is risky. All your assets are in livestock. And I suppose the natural progression was to, I guess, for want of a better word, move into something else and get a bit of land. So, yeah, that's quite exciting.
You've always had a good Irish engagement out on the farm. You know, I mean, there's numerous students and ag scientists that have been around New Zealand that have visited you, but also that have worked with you on the farm.
That's right. Yeah. And had a phenomenally good crop of lads again this year who are holding the fort there while I was off. I'll not name them, but they'll know who they are, and they've done a blooming good job. So I'm very proud of them. And look, we've got a strange model. I mean, every year we're kind of just looking for new people. As a matter of fact, we're sticking our hand out again and hoping that there'll be another crop of people coming out to us. So, if anyone's interested, I don't know whether there's the ability to put the email up or...
Yeah, we can do that. No, we'll get it across. We'll shoot the email up, Olin. But, I mean, that was the challenge for you and for New Zealand during that whole COVID piece, wasn't it? When you locked down, like, you know, I suppose what Ireland brings to New Zealand in terms of milking some of those cows, like, I mean, it definitely was a kind of a gaping hole there while the COVID restrictions were ongoing.
Absolutely, Jack. You know, and, you know, it was very visible, and probably in conjunction as well, agricultural contractors, massive gap in their labour pool whilst the borders were closed. And funnily, there was measures put in place by the government of that time to try and, you know, not depend on the overseas workers, et cetera, but lo and behold, they're all coming back again. And funny, I was just talking to a farmer the other day, was commenting on how poor the workmanship was during COVID, because there was a lot of dad's army spraying off the street to drive tractors, and now these contractors are able to provide a better service. So look, it's good to see that the Irish people are putting their hand to the wheel. And look, the way I look at it, with the Irish people that we've had, it's nice they can come out to experience. I can share some of my knowledge with them, and then they can come back home and apply it to their own business. So
yeah,
so strongly encourage people to do that.
You were in the North Island, Olin, and essentially you're looking for potentially some help. We'll say from the 1st of July onwards, 2024. Yeah. Like, is that what you're looking for?
That's right, or even earlier. I mean, traditionally the season starts from 1st of June to 31st of May as a typical season. We have already secured someone for the seasonal help, you know, during calving and breeding, but now we've got an opening for two farm assistants, and we take them for generally the Irish working holiday visas for 12 months. And I say to guys, you might as well, if you're going to come out for 9 months, you might as well come for 12. So that's effectively what we're looking for, May to June onwards.
What kind of a role would they have, Roland? Like, what's the typical day for them? Is it, you know, milking, grassland management, that type of stuff, we have to stock?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a, and I suppose it's quite interesting because we've sort of looked at our labour structure, and it's probably not the most secure from an employer point of view that we're constantly churning and that. And I'll be honest, it's a bit of a box of chocolates as to what you can get each year, you know, because everyone's got different capabilities. But what I've sort of found is that generally speaking, there'll be someone will have a particular interest, it might be calf rearing, and you'll sort of, you know, when someone does well in a role, you'll put more responsibility onto them. More generically, a typical day. So we don't have a hierarchy per se, Aidan, because I think, you know, particularly the people from Ireland, they've all similar skill sets. So typical day will be involved in the milking and the stockmanship. Then it's, you know, you're not going to throw someone the grassland management the day they arrive. So I suppose I'd be involved in that. And then as the year goes on, if someone takes more interest in that, they get more of an insight in that. So we're very transparent as far as, you know, finances and all the running of the business. We're very happy sharing that, because again, and it's an interesting thing. A lot of the guys come from Ireland and say, oh, I've never been able to look at a live budget of a farm. You know, they're quite intrigued by actually seeing the numbers, which is interesting, isn't it? That some of these guys don't get exposed to that.
Typically, Olin, we reward those type of employees with a foot spa every night and €1,000 in cash at the end of the week. Are we kind of along those kind of lines in terms of remuneration? Or
so this is in the Farmer's Journal, Jack, is it? Yeah. Oh, look at it. I like to see it as a win-win. Look, we pay some people competitive with what the market is at in New Zealand. And then the other advantage in the North Island, in particular, like 30 minutes from Hamilton, there's a good strong Gaelic football team. We're actually sponsoring the jerseys there for them this year, so that's quite cool. But you know, they come out and they're already established in an Irish community, which I think is quite a comforting thing if people are leaving home, you know, and trying to start out in another country. So.
Olin, we'll come back to that maybe towards the end of the show again, but in terms of the time of year out there now, and you know, I'm just trying to get our guys get their heads around it. Like, I mean, at the moment most of our guys are trying to pull calves out and, you know, cranking up the milk machine into full steam. You're at the other end of the thing in terms of what's happening on your farms at the moment.
That's right, Jack. So we're sort of late, well, we're actually autumn now, so late lactation. Probably when I get back now, I'll be going through some condition scoring and then picking out those early calving, lighter cows, drying them off, starting to build autumn cover. We've had a good summer. There was a lot of, I don't know if you picked up, there was a lot of hysteria, and this is sort of the narrative with a lot of these weather agencies that we're going to have a really strong El Nino, and it pretty much had people terrified. I was convinced they're on commission of food sales because they had created hysteria about how dry the summer was going to be and you needed to have feed in place, and they were working on modeling, and thankfully that didn't eventuate. We had a dry summer, but we had frequent rain, so we're now sitting in a position where we haven't probably used the supplements that was anticipated. Our farms are green, our covers are low at the moment, but you know, we get another bit of rain 2 weeks, we're away again. So compared to some of those hard years we went through 3 or 4 years ago, we're sitting fairly smooth. New farm production's tracking okay, a little bit behind where I thought it'd be. We had a very wet winter. Then we had good early spring, which contrived with a good breeding season this year. And then it never really dried out. So, you know, it's probably typical on the low milk price, the reason for a good year as well. That's what happens.
Yeah. And to okay, that's your piece and your farm. To broaden that out, Olin, in terms of a kind of a national supply piece, how should we rate or how should we compare milk supply over that 23-24 kind of season that's coming to an end now for you in New Zealand? Like, how should we? Is it a good one? Is it one that's, you know, the weather was right for the majority, or you know, what way would you kind of quantify it or qualify it?
Yeah, so I think it's fairly similar. I think it might be a percent or two behind on last year, but just remember last year was an exceptionally good year. There was a really good wet summer last year, so a lot of cheap milk made. So I think my take on it nationally, we had pretty weak cash flow at the start of the year, so potentially people weren't chasing that marginal milk, so they weren't buying the feed. They were sort of dialing back. Then the summer's been more normal, so they haven't got that boost of autumn rain. So all in all, 1% behind. So when you think in the scheme of supply, it's not going to put a massive jolt on milk price or anything per se. I suppose the other point out of that, we're not seeing a drastic contraction of milk supply either. You know, with this talk of sort of reducing cow numbers, if it's a percent behind a good year last year, I'm not seeing any signals that we're sort of... There's probably, if you look at a graph over the last 5 years, there's probably a gradual drop in that.
And do you reckon, how is that kind of, why is that happening? Do you reckon there's more milk per cow coming with kind of slightly less numbers, or kind of how is that volume piece, how is it playing out, or where do you see kind of the changes that are happening?
As in how we've...
So yeah, I'm saying, as you say, that the perception is that the environmental piece is restricting output. It's no new planning permission. There's no new, you know, for new units, etc. So are units trying to get more out per cow? So they might have slightly less cow numbers, but more per cow and a little bit more input and all that kind of stuff. Is what are kind of the trends in terms of how that milk is being produced on farm?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question and one that I'm a little bit... at difference with what some of the people are sort of promoting. So the greenhouse gas one in particular, there's sort of a perception that the magic cow is 400 milk solids and that you have an efficient cow and you fill in the gaps with supplementary feed, although we all know that that's not necessarily the case. So there's a little bit of a trap there that people could get caught in that and it's not... It's jargon we're presented to us now. It's not actually affecting our pockets at the moment, but I suppose in particular Fonterra has introduced the Scope 3 emissions targets and farmers are trying to get their head around that. There's a bit of talk around, you know, bringing in more supplementary feed, but to me it's about getting a more efficient cow, whether it's grass or silage or maize or whatever.
You mentioned, and I leave Aidan with the kind of on-farm stuff in a minute, but I mean, you mentioned the Scope 3 piece there in terms of Fonterra pushing it back on farmers, and obviously they create those emissions, or the livestock on those farms create the emissions. But how are they saying, or kind of what's the kind of piece around how they should deal with those emissions? You know, I mean, is it a piece like here in Ireland we have a nitrates derogation piece, and it's water quality based, but effectively it means less heads. You know, the kind of a way on farms it's a stocking rate limit effectively. Like, you know, but is that the same piece that's happening in New Zealand? Is it kind of Fonterra saying, listen, lads, less numbers, you know, reduce your emissions that way, or kind of how are they dealing with it?
Yeah, because looking at their document, and there's a lot, as you can imagine, it's a pretty thick document. There's a lot of information, and it's nearly on the verge of being patronizing towards good farmers. Now, I say that. What I'm meaning is, I guess, the below average farmers, it's the things like improving your 6 week and calf rate, reducing your replacement numbers, better conversion of feed and pasture, which all makes sense, but it's nearly like, well, jeepers, I'm trying to do that anyway. But yeah. I suppose there's low hanging fruit there that we probably haven't captured. So if we can, so I suppose if you were to look at the
last... They're efficiencies all in, so aren't they? They're efficiencies, yeah, they are. That's more right. So yeah. Than a kind of a yeah. Cap or reduction.
Correct. Yeah. So there is management things that we have control over. Maybe a little bit of debate about how far to go with the milk solid per cow thing. You also have to maybe question where that information is coming from, a manufacturer. So they're going to have their own vested interest in keeping a supply level at a certain, you know, I'm just being a cynic here with where they're coming from. But I think collectively there is probably room for improvement in a number of farms for those things. So the bottom line is we have control of some of those things in our own hands.
Yeah, and are Fonterra doing anything themselves in terms of trying to reduce the kind of, I call it, the processor emissions piece? Like, is there any new developments? You hear over here, you hear some of our processors taking on solar farms, taking on other bits of renewable pieces, like we said, to try and reduce their kind of processor emissions that they are in control of themselves. Like, is there much happening kind of at the processor level in terms of Fonterra and what they're doing?
Yeah, probably similar thing. They are looking at a few initiatives. I mean, there's a few things, I think, even they've looked at, can't think of it, something to do with the diesel engine, it's like reducing the amount of diesel, and it's not electric vehicles. They've one electric tank, but you can think into what you think of that. They've converted some of their coal burners to pellets, so they were wood burners. That's created an on-farm issue because now our bedding for calves has gone through the roof because they're taking a lot of that wood waste for the pellet burners. I suppose on a company level, most car the reps would be driving EVs or hybrid cars, so I suppose they're doing that little bit there. So and I suppose all those little things, and a lot of it is just sentiment to consumers that at least, hey, we are trying. What effect they have on a global scale is questionable, but there's a few things in that going.
The other piece related to that, and the director of Chagas, Frank O'Mara and Pat Dillon, were over in New Zealand recently, and they came home with this piece of farmers really engaged with the water quality piece, Olin, and that there was 300 catchment areas around New Zealand where farmers were actually investing in equipment to measure water quality themselves and kind of taking a real hands-on approach so that they can learn from it and see what they're doing and get real measurement in terms of how water quality is behaving. Do you get that sense among farmers and in the North Island, or what you hear from what's happening in the South Island, that there's real proactive stuff happening at farm level in terms of that water quality piece?
Yeah, and a funny, just listening to your question, you think back, it's probably been incrementally, there's been a good lot of work done in that in the last, even 10, 15 years with fencing of waterways. So the pioneers have been out there doing that. They've been retiring, marginal land and planting that in wetland things. So there's been quite a few sort of own self-initiated projects on farm. The measuring thing, not aware of in our area. I know there's Dairy NZ had sort of some catchment areas, and the councils have got some measuring things in place, which we need, because we need to be able to try, well, what might work and what isn't. On farm, from a Fonterra point of view, each farm, again, the concept of a farm environment plan was introduced a number of years ago. So that's when you get an approved environmental planner to come out and look at your farm and then come up with recommendations. Now, there was talk that by 2025, that would be a license to farm. If you didn't have a completed environment plan, Fonterra won't have to take your milk. I'm not sure if that 2025 target will be reached, but I guess there's a framework in place. And, when you think about it, we're probably doing more than maybe we give our own selves credit for in the water piece as well.
Have you seen any trends at farm level around that space in terms of less artificial nitrogen, less bag nitrogen going out? Is there more the multi-species? Is there any kind of real trends emerging in terms of what farmers are doing to kind of change that leaching piece or that nitrate piece on farm?
Yeah, they see the nitrogen thing. It's probably a better question for a South Island farmer, Jack, under irrigation, where they probably were applying 220 kilograms a hectare anyway. Where we are in the Waikato, we're probably only looking at 120, 130 units of N per hectare, because we are dictated by the dry summers. Once it dries, it's just not effective to put it on. In saying that, there's a greater awareness with quoted N, your sustain, your quoted nitrogen. Farmers are turning to that more on the marginal times. That will become more probably inclusive into your farm environment plan as well. The mixed sward species thing hasn't taken off a lot yet. The challenge that I've sort of considered it, my reluctance is that, when you put anything in replace of a perennial and they only grow, at more temperate climates, you're left with a very open sward in the winter. Now, it's different in Ireland where you're housing those animals, but if I ever got an open sward with 25% other species that only grow certain times of the year, you have to be very, very careful that you don't damage that open pasture, in the winter when you're grazing it. Now, there is lots of trial working on it, particularly with a plantain and the emission, reduction of emissions in that. So I think probably not getting the uptake in that maybe they would have thought. It seems to be slower to take off than what I would have seen when, you know, we've been doing a lot of the trial with that for a number of years and it hasn't really catched on farm yet. So sure why.
No, I'd agree. I mean, I was there 20 years ago, I'd say, and there was a lot of research going on the plantain piece and all that. So, as you say, it's still struggling so at farm level in terms of implementation and kind of latching onto it. Olin, before I hand over to Aidan in terms of some of the kind of on-farm stuff and what's happening there, the milk price, milk cost ratio, so the kind of the margin that's left for New Zealand Kiwi farmers in this current year, 23-24, you know, that's coming to an end for you, I'll say. Like, I mean, how will it rate in terms of like good year, bad year, poor year in terms of, you know, the margin? Now, we'll just, you know, talk about the margin rather than the price of the cost.
Yeah. There are probably two answers to that. If you had asked that question in September or August, September, when opening forecast was on its ground, you'd be saying this is very much the average farmer is going to work in a loss. We're now looking more. I think there's some horrific numbers that, you know, the figure of $8 break even is bandied around for the average farmer, which is pretty shocking. But we won't be far off that price this year. So it's probably going to be a mediocre year for the average farmer. For the above average farmer, as usual, they'll be doing okay. And remember that above average farmer, his cost structure won't be there. So he's making more use of that higher milk, you know, that milk price as it is. It'd be interesting to see, and it's probably too early to call, what sort of behavior has come out. Like, there's nothing like a good shock at the start of the season to tighten the belt, and I'm guilty of it ourselves. You go through your budget with a red line, and you sort of go into into your war chest budget. Whether that behavior has been able to stick with others when the milk prices went up remains to be seen. And I think, look, you need one of those milk prices every 3-4 years just to press the reset, don't you?
Yeah, Aidan, you'll have been on trips, Aidan, when the cost of production in New Zealand was kind of bandied around at $3.50 and $4 per kilo milk solids, you know, almost. And so if you had heard $8 per kilo milk solids in terms of price, you would have said bonanza job, wouldn't you, Aidan?
Yeah, you think you would, Jack, but sure, look, it just goes, and the same story here, you know, 40 cent a litre, you think you're minting gold, like, but I mean, just the way the costs have gone over the last 18 months, Olin, I'm sure it's the same in New Zealand, like, I mean, fertiliser, feed, and all these other ancillary costs as well, veterinary medicines, even getting hiring an electrician to come on the farm. Like, it's 100 euros an hour now for the electrician, like, doing the VAT. It's crazy stuff, you know, just to wire a plug. So look, I mean, these are the issues that we're faced with here, and I'm sure it's the same in New Zealand.
Yeah, like I'd easily say on that, I'm talking combined, so I haven't I'll get access to our farm owners thing, but I'd easily say $1.20 has been added on to our cost structure since COVID, and the majority of that will be what you're talking about: increase in labour, inflationary pressure on everything. You know, you're right. Anything you fix, if you have any serviceman, he's 25% dearer than he was. Now there's talk, because the New Zealand economy is overheat, like, it's inflation's running very high, and you know, they still haven't cut back the reserve interest rates. There's talk that inflation is meant to flatten this year and contract. This is a Rabobank report I was reading some time ago, that fertilizer should soften and whatnot. But I've yet to ever see, we might get a stalling in it, but I've never seen something invoice saying, oh, we're going to charge you less than last year because inflation stopped. So, you know, I suppose, though, then it begs the question that no cost is a fixed cost in your cost structure. And then it's back to, well, actually, how do we get around this embedded milk price? And I suppose if you want to look at the other way, you think, well, we get inflation on our inputs thing, you should hope you have an inflationary impact on your selling, on, you know, your out the gate price as well, in theory. So it is a pretty hard thing, you know, that reset, your diesel, your fuel, your fare, contracting fees, everything's just creeping up. And you're right, even, you know, on your last visit there, you probably had good farmers producing milk under $4 or sub $3. There will be still some of them, but they're few and far between. Those farmers are now near $5. So you need that $8-$9 really to make it worthwhile, aren't you?
When you include interest and all the other extra costs, which are
right. Sorry, on interest, you're right. I mean, that's another. We went from 2-3%. You're looking now, if you're buying money now, you're looking at 8%. So if you are fairly high in debt, that massive, massive starve on cash flow before you even start running anything on the farm.
And what's it like now, Olin, in relation to paying back the principal element of it? You know, before, back 15, 20 years ago, it was you know, you pay interest only in a lot of cases. The last time I was out there, all the talk was interest and capital. What's the situation now?
Yeah, so I think that's mainly the narrative now. You got to be paying off interest and capital. So there's probably chickens have come home to roost around capital gains, and that, you know, this, I guess back then, what was happening, farmers could buy a farm, 2 years' time, it had inflated by 25%, so they were able to just revalue, just, you know, ride the waves of that land valuation. I mean, from a business sense, it makes sense to me. Like, if you're just paying off interest, it's not a great business model to get ahead. Well, I guess what has happened, Aidan, as a result of that, you had average and below average farmers become quite wealthy without doing anything. Mm. And these are the guys now caught with that. Gee, you have to actually make this a productive farm and be able to pay off principal to the banks. So, you know, you hear all sorts of rumors that, the banks tell me 1 in 10 people aren't paying off, or sorry, only 1 in 10 are paying off principal and yara, yara, yara. But I think the reality is they're a lot stricter, and the numbers have to stake up. And they're probably evaluating new proposals a lot more stricter too. They want to look at your Fonterra emissions profile for borrowing and all those sorts of things. So there's, what is the story with Irish banks? Is the environmental metric?
It's coming. It's not really in yet, but I mean, all the talk is that, like, it's going to be based on preferential rates for lower carbon footprint milk production, really is where it's going. And that's aligned then with new EU rules around green finance and green lending. So it's not in yet. They're all talking about it. But I think it definitely is going to come. You know, it's in the post.
And you see, unfortunately, we're the last man at the bottom of the ladder, as in, you know, they're getting, you know, they have to be deemed to be seeing the socially correct thing. Okay, we can pass a bit of that cost on down the ladder. And it's the same thing with, you know, our manufacturer's emission thing. There's only so much they can do. And then we can throw another thing here in front of the farmer that'll make our customers think we're doing good as well. So, it's hard to get your head around it sometimes, isn't it?
So, Olin, come back now to current day. So you're walking around Monaghan at the moment. You're seeing we're in right in the middle of spring. And look, I mean, it's an important couple of weeks. Like, so we've had a difficult last 6 weeks, a lot of rainfall. February rainfall has been 1.5 and 2 times the normal for most of the country. So it's been very wet on the back of a very wet winter. So a lot of farmers are behind the grazing in terms of the area of graze it should be. But I suppose for those, think of those now that are kind of more or less on target. What are the things you'd be doing now if you're back in New Zealand at this time of year? What are the things you'd be focusing on a week-to-week basis in terms of grassland management?
Yeah, because funny, that situation you've just pointed out sounded like us in spring. We were probably 200-300 below our target cover on the 1st of June. So we were below target basically the whole way through. How did we get through that ourselves? And particularly on a new farm, it was quite challenging. So I suppose we were lucky in that sense. We had the optimum cow condition on the 1st of June. So, you know, we were able to use that bit of a buffer to carry us through. We were strategic then about where we put our supplements. So we probably, you know, the later dry cows, we sort of probably pushed them a bit harder than maybe a fresh calver one. So we still stuck to our sort of discipline of our feed budget and just divvied it around a little bit. I suppose if you're saying now that some guys are on target, where did they go from here? I'm just trying to...
On target for area graze as opposed to cover. You know, cover is pretty much on target anyway, you'd say, you know, but... There's a couple of grass.
So I suppose I've answered, I guess, what we've done in that situation. I guess another lever, we didn't have to pull it, but then you'd start thinking of milking frequency. Well, if my demand if my supply is still a bit lax, maybe I need to put some of these cows on once a day or heifers on once a day just to take.
And would you put many of your, you know, typically now, are you talking 10, 15, 20% or the whole herd? Or what's kind of the ratio?
Funny, and I know this is jumping out a little bit. I just talking, there's a particularly large corporate farm in New Zealand, and their policy is that every cow calved 42 days after the start of calving goes once a day the whole way through to the start of mating. So they're thinking, we're happy to sacrifice, and that might be 25-30% of the herd. They're realizing that those late calvers are your problem cows. The least we can do, it's the cheapest form of intervention, really. They'll carry them through once a day. Once they've had a heat then, or sorry, once they've had been AI'd, then they're they're back twice a day. So yeah, there's probably not as many people. It has to be pretty extremating before you'd go around the district and hear about Timmy, Jimmy and Bob having their herds on once a day. And probably the natural deviation is Oshawa Bay and more feed. So that's okay. Now, last year, cash flow was extremely tight for a lot of farmers. It's interesting, though, cows probably got pushed harder, but we had a good October and we probably had a rising plane, and hence the empty rates in our district are very good this year compared to last. Okay. So that was kind of outside a lot of people's control, but compared to the year before where there was a lot of high empty rates, we had a bad October, November. So it just proves no matter how good you are in that pasture-based system, you're still pretty exposed to the elements of Mother Nature too. And that's a perfect example as well.
Yeah. So the things you'd be doing though on a weekly basis, you'd be checking cow condition score and measuring grass. You're using the grass budget then obviously to get you the magic day.
Yeah. And then I guess then out of that, I suppose at the start of calving, it might be slightly different in an Irish indoor housing thing, but we'd be then sort of, you know, pushing those later calving cows because they're all going to be in good condition anyway. Mm. So they can be strictly on maintenance and they can be pushed out of the back of the farm and just slowing that rotation even longer on them. Then I guess the once a day thing, we didn't have to do that. So yeah, it was a bit of a tricky one, just come to terms with the new farm. And then also there was a set amount of feed on farm. And I was just trying to use as little as that as I could to see, you know, and try and hold that for the summer, which we did. Maybe next year it'll be a little bit easier when I'm sort of not blindfolded going through. But you're right.
Yeah.
Because as you know, Aidan, you get a couple of good fine days and the next thing the horse is bolted and you think, oh, I could have let them go a bit earlier. So it is and I'm not sure in the context. So how far through calving are you sort of, most farmed be 4 weeks through now?
Yeah, it'll be 4 or 5 weeks, I say, at this stage. So 60% to 70% to 80% calved is kind of where we are for most places at the moment, you know, depending on when they started. So well on through. And I mean, I suppose St. Patrick's Day coming up now is our kind of benchmark for 6 weeks in most cases.
But you're walking, a lot of farmers walking that tightrope at the moment.
They are, or they will be in the next couple of weeks. You know, they're probably not there yet. And because a lot of people haven't got as much graze in February as they would like, they're at the stage now where they've loads of grass. But as you know well, the risk there is that you actually end up being very short of grass later on.
And then you'll have some farmers saying, if someone would criticise you if you say you have too much grass now, you're not milking enough cows, or you're not calving early enough. So it is a tricky one, isn't it?
It's a fine line. You mentioned there as well about the empty rates being better, I suppose, last season than normal. And like what I've been hearing over the last few years, whether it's on the grapevine or in person when I'm out there, is that empty rates are going in the wrong direction. So it's good to hear that's been arrested. I know you mentioned maybe it was the rising plane of nutrition and better nutrition maybe for the breeding season that caused that in terms of grass supply and quality. But in general, Olin, like, I mean, what's the feeling like among your colleagues or the New Zealand farmer towards genetic gain, the BW, genomics? You know, these are all debates that we've had in Ireland over the last 5 or 10 years in terms of the direction of travel for our EBI. Is the same happening in New Zealand?
Well, I think my own personal take on the New Zealand genetic thing is that it probably got neglected in that expansion period over the 2000s. So it was a huge demand on cows. So you could, you know, anything with four legs pretty much could convert milk, and conversion farms were wanting to take them. In the meantime, we probably had an increase in production per cow and lost that focus on fertility. Now, just as an example, and you might be able to answer this, Aidan, the latest BW ranking came out there and there's a pie chart and there's only 12% weighting on fertility, 12% within that pie chart. I don't know what just as a comparative, do you know what the content of fertility and, or roughly speaking, it'd be more than
12%. it's around 30% roughly. Now whenever we argue that with LIC or AENZ, you know, they'll come back and say that there's more than just fertility in the BW, you know, in terms of body condition score is kind of an element of fertility as well, and a few more metrics there. But so are you saying that there's not enough emphasis within the BW on fertility?
Yeah, and then for me as a share milker, so bull selection, obviously you're looking for those high BW cows, but the high BW cow doesn't necessarily, so I could pick better fertility BV animals, but they've got a lower index. So there's something wrong there that I can't go and select the best cow and make, and then she has that a better fertility BV than an average index.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just
because I see a lot of the I was looking at the RAS list there not too long ago, you know, the ranking of active sires. And there's a lot of bulls there with very mediocre fertility, high up in BW.
So what's happened there, I think, and the late great Brian Wickham was trying to generate a bit of movement in that space in comparison to what he did to Ireland. So I think one problem is there's not enough recording. So not enough recording of our stock that falls out of the system. So a lot of farmers might be recording cows as empty. So then as a result of that, we're not getting that data put back towards that bull in a BV thing. Another issue that there was that and they've changed this now, but short gestation was mistakenly then ranking some of those bulls better on fertility BV, but now they're working it out on conception date. You know, they're working it out on conception date and factoring in that short gestation, if you see what I mean. So there's a bit of a
Yeah, now we're still on the calving interval in Ireland or EBI, and they can't seem to get it onto calving date, but they're heading in that direction. Yeah, so
gestation question, and I just dabbled a bit in that because a bit of an issue just with. But I guess I'm finally at a stage that I'm not planning on buying any more cows. So I suppose it's really trying to tidy everything up. But the last couple of years, we're just getting a bit of a dog's leg or a loop on the, you know, a bit of a overhang on the end of our calving. I said, right, I'm going to try and tidy that up. So I actually did 3 weeks AI. Normally do 5 weeks AI, but I did three and a half, 4 weeks of dairy AI, and then did the other two weeks of short gestation. And I had a 50-odd percent conception on those. So that's going to pull a cow forward 14 days, which is massive. Massive amount for us, you know, and I'm hoping, so that bull obviously is 28-odd days, but we can't breed off them. It'd be nice if we could, so they're not dairy proven. They're dairy, but they're not nexus. But it's just another tool that I suppose can be used, and it'll pay for itself, really. You know, we might lose a heifer calf this year, but she's out off the tracks 2 weeks earlier. So that's 2 weeks more pre-mating that she has the ability to cycle, and it stays in milk as well. So be interesting to see how that works out for us.
Yeah. We follow that one. There's a big focus here on dairy beef. You know, there's nearly more talk now of dairy beef AI, but dairy beef bulls are going to use as opposed to actual dairy bulls. But, you know, the bobby calf situation in Ireland is now banned. So a small percentage, 2% of calves born in Ireland were being slaughtered in factories up to last year. That's now banned. Obviously, it's not banned in New Zealand in the sense that the bobby calf trade is still there. But what's the feeling among farmers and the industry? And are there continued pressures coming on that? Or where do you stand?
Yeah, they're probably not the same. Like there was a bit of momentum there 3-5 years ago to sort of push harder on that. There's been a bit of a lull. However, I've just seen some of the breeding companies now are starting a PT, you know, progeny testing program for that dairy beef thing as well. Whether it gains much uptake or not. It's a funny because we need, you know, for me personally with a crossbred herd, I'm reluctant enough to go down that full on beef, you know, we as long as it's easy calving, happy to do that. There was a calf rearing went through a bit of a doldrum there. I think milk powder went really expensive, and with COVID and that, there was a year there people weren't buying calves, so that price kind of went down. So people say, well, there's no premium here on whether it's a Hereford or a bobby calf. It's still the elephant in the room. I'm not going to deny that, because eventually, I mean, if you ask me, further down the line, we might see that 4 day period extended to 10 days or 2 weeks, you know, and that's going to be a massive hurdle, and hopefully we can beat them to it and come up with our own solution, but just not 100% sure. And every time I'm asked that question, I don't have an answer.
Yeah, but it's I suppose it's the one thing you'd say that's kind of sticking out in terms of a risk to reputational damage, you know, in terms of calves and all the rest. And we've seen a few examples in Ireland in the last 6 months where there's been TV shows, and, you know, Primetime had a documentary on calf welfare and calf transport. And, you know, I mean, the public pick up on that kind of thing, but Look, it wasn't as, you know, it wasn't as big a part of our system here, so it's easier for Ireland to solve it. But
well, that was the
interesting.
other, yeah, that was the other thing I was going to sort of, in proportion to the number of dairy cows per beef cows, Ireland's probably in a more favourable position because you have a lot more kind of part-time farmers, maybe that's an outlet to those dairy beef calves, whereas in New Zealand, the ratio of dairy farms per those beef entities is probably too strong of a ratio.
Yeah. So the market is the issue. Yeah. Listen, Nolan, I mean, it's been great chatting to you and getting the roundup on what's happening in New Zealand. As always, you're a mine of information and so open with sharing all of that. So on behalf of Jack and myself, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for telling your story again to our listeners, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
No worries. Thanks, Aidan, and all the best for the rest of calving and whatnot. And I hope the grass supply takes a turn for the better.
Hopefully, you don't want to at this stage. Thanks, Olin.
All the best. Cheerio now.
Excellent stuff. Thanks, Aidan. Thanks, Olin. Top class. Great to have the chat. And folks, if anyone was interested in heading out to New Zealand, you could do worse than linking up with the Monaghan man and get a bit of experience. It's always good to have someone that you can talk to on the ground. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks to Grass and Agro for helping us make this show happen. Thanks to you for watching and for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren, Aidan and all. And thanks again to you for the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868 366 6465. Remember, you can listen back to any of our recent webinars, our podcasts, on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.